leave the mic in the holster, so to speak. It kind of sends the signal that they don't want us wandering around. Okay. Well, just fine then. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. It's really great to be up here with such a creative and action-oriented group of women. It's a pleasure to work with all of them, and I get to interface with them pretty regularly. Pardon my sniffling and my gravelly voice. I picked up some gook on the airplane. So as Deb mentioned, I run the National Center for Healthy Housing. We have been engaged for the last several years in looking at green building programs nationwide to understand about the opportunities that they present to create healthier housing, particularly for low-income families. So we do a combination of research, training, and policy, and the presentation I'm giving today really speaks to our policy work. And so let me just start a little bit about what's going on in the green building movement. Despite changes in our economy and the housing market crisis, there still is a lot of enthusiasm and momentum around green building. And the green building movement really initially came out of a care for our environment and a care for reducing energy expenses, operating expenses for residents. But what we've learned is that families are demanding green housing for the health benefits, and builders are starting to tap into that as well. Here's just a little slide that was a survey done by RCLCO, and they asked people that purchased green homes why they chose to buy green. And overwhelmingly, people said that they purchased green for the health and well-being expenses, 41% health and wellness, compared with 24% for the environment and 18% for energy savings. This is the group that said that they would pay even if they couldn't get their money back. So there's a little bit of an intangible piece of green building that relates to health and wellness for families. We also know from surveys done by NAHB and others that the lion's share of the green building market right now is women, women that have children, women in the age bracket of 35 to 50, and women that are well-educated. So that gives us a little sense about our target market with regard to kind of mainstream green building. So we did a report. We did it initially in 2006 to look at the national green building programs and how they stack up in terms of occupant health. We wanted to identify the programs that really would give you the biggest bang for your buck in terms of health and use that information to help builders, architects, and policymakers figure out which programs they should select for their communities. And as you probably know, there are a lot of communities that are starting to adopt mandatory green building programs. In Washington, D.C., the area where I live, they adopted a green building ordinance just last year, and it requires all units that are 10,000 square feet or more, these are multifamily buildings typically, to meet the Enterprise Green Communities criteria, and they have to meet LEED H for commercial buildings. And I'll give you a little bit more detail about what these programs are in a second. All right, so how we compared the criteria were to our seven principles that we developed as part of the National Healthy Homes Training Center. And in fact, we cribbed these from the ASMA Regional Council who developed them. I'm sorry, ASMA Regional Council, Lori's over there, who developed these probably back in 2003 or 2004 with its expert group. So these have kind of over time been refined a little bit. They might look a tiny bit different than what ARC came up with. But we use them as holistic principles for healthy homes. So instead of saying we want places to be lead safe and safe from radon and safe from pesticides, we've kind of grouped them into these categories. And so just to give you a quick primer on why we care about these things, here you can see, just out of curiosity, do we have any builders or housing folks in the crowd, people that think of themselves as housers? Okay. And what kind of housing area do you come from? Very great. Okay. So would the rest of you be characterized as public health or environmental health folks primarily? Okay. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a primer on some of the building science here. Up in the upper corner here, you see properly installed window flashing, which is a very inexpensive way to keep water from getting into the wells of your, into the home and the walls. You can see when it's not done what kind of results you get. We're showing a hot water heater in the right here, and I think one of the things that we reference in the criteria is catch pans for hot water heaters, the idea being that they'll catch slow drips, not necessarily that they'll help you in the case of a major hot water flood. Here you can see when you don't install your eaves properly, what you get in terms of dampness along the side of the homes. And obviously this would translate potentially into mold and moisture problems on the interior of the home. So on the front part of the building, you can see where it's dry, the eaves are extended out. On the side of the building, they were not constructed that way, and you've got a moisture problem. I always laugh at this slide because I used to mow the lawn at my house. That was one of my jobs, and I definitely ran over some drain pipes in my day. And that's probably what's happened here. Someone ran over the drain pipe with the lawnmower or something else, and so it's no longer properly functioning. You can see on the other slide where the grading hasn't been done properly and the water's pooling around the foundation, and it's next to the electrical box, among other things. Clean. So we do talk about how we can help families to keep their homes cleaner. How do we build and design in ways that make that easier? Whether it be installing places for them to store their shoes when they come in, walk-off mats, and smooth and cleanable floors. One of the things we have found from some of our research work where we're analyzing the impact of green building on resident health is that they report that their homes are easier to clean. And we think that this probably has to do with the flooring choices that we've made. Ventilation, you can see here where some of the, on the right, the ventilation, probably a bath fan, just venting right into the attic, which is unfortunate. And then, you know, sometimes you'll have fans that are not necessarily performing properly. In the kitchens, you can kind of tell if you have a proper fan. If when you open up the cabinets above your stove, you can see the ductwork going up. You want to make sure it's being vented to the exterior. A lot of times you'll have those recycling fans that really are ineffective at helping to move air out of the house. There's two types of ventilation. You've got local exhaust, which is provided by your fans in your bath in the kitchen, and then you've got whole house ventilation, and that can be performed, provided through a bunch of different strategies, which are a little complicated to explain today, but suffice to say that we want to ensure that we've got enough fresh air coming into the home environment. We know when ventilation is poor that we see these kinds of results. Safety. Now this, when I get into the programs, you'll see that the majority of the green building programs have overlooked safety. And again, I think it's because the green building movement really came out of the environment, out of environmental health, and so this idea of injury prevention wasn't necessarily incorporated at their conception. But there are things that can be done both to protect children and to protect older Americans, and you can see some examples here on the slide. Okay. Like, I don't remember adding that little sound effect. It's nifty. Here are, just so you know, this is a slide that talks about where injuries occur, and we know that the home is one of the top places where injuries occur. We know that injuries in the home are one of the top killer of young kids, and they're also, the home is a very significant place for injuries for older adults as well. Contaminant-free, here's where we talk typically about pesticides and radon. Environmental tobacco smoke is a significant issue in the home environment. And one of the things that we're recommending is direct vented gas appliances or sealed combustion. And then low VOC materials. What I will say about this is that I think the research is not particularly good telling what the long-term benefits are for low VOC products. They're not that expensive. They probably are helpful for workers that have to work with them. So we generally include them in our criteria. But I would say for a program that's calling itself green and healthy, if the only thing that they're doing is low VOC products, I probably would not call that green and healthy. I would call it greener. But they need to do some higher impact things to really be considered healthy. Pest-free. Are we post-lunch? Yes, we are. Sorry about this slide. We certainly worry about not only the presence of pests because they're an asthma trigger, but also when people have pests, they do things to treat them on their own, and that results in pesticide use and oftentimes dangerous pesticide use. Maintenance. This is kind of linked to cleaning the home as well, that we want to provide a home that is easy to maintain, and we want to provide education to homeowners and residents about what they can do on a regular basis to maintain their home in a healthy manner. We have on our website, which is nchh.org, a maintenance checklist that gives people some feedback about which time of year you do which things. Just for added effect, I put that slide in twice. So we can have that sound. Here's the report, and You can see at the, sorry, the website's a little dark there, but it's nchh.org/green_analysis_208.pdf. You could simply go to our website, nchh.org, and write green analysis, and it'll come up. So this is the update of the report that we did in 2006. We looked again this year. What we wanted to know is, has there been any movement in terms of the green building programs? Has our advocacy worked, essentially? Because not only did we do the analysis, but we've been in touch with each of the green building programs to say, hey, we've looked at your criteria. We're pleased that you're doing green building work and that you're interested in the health of residents. These are the things that we think you can do to be even stronger in that arena. These are the programs we looked at. In 2006, we also looked at the ALA, the American Lung Association Health House Program. They've since discontinued that program, so we did not include it in this analysis. And then this is just to give you a sense of the overarching principles that these programs seek to achieve. So you can see healthy living environment is the item in the enterprise communities criteria that we were focusing on. As a disclaimer, we were heavily involved in writing the criteria for the enterprise program, and so it scores well, you'll see, and we think it deserves to score well because we've really put a lot of time and effort into writing criteria that we think are very good. LEED for homes, so indoor environmental quality is the area that we focused on when we reviewed their criteria. And as you can see, all of these are very similar. EPA's program and NAHB. So here was our scoring methodology. They received a 3 if the criteria in their program was equivalent to ours and mandatory. They got a 2 if they had a mandatory criteria that was similar but not identical. And then we gave them a 1 if it was an optional criteria that was similar to ours. And we gave them a 0 if the criterion wasn't included at all. This time we did scores, grades. The last time we did this report, we did kind of a consumer report style thing, so a full moon, half moon. But we thought the scores made it even more apparent of how these programs stacked up. All right, so here are the results. Again, this time we've organized them by the 7 principles, and we show you each program, and so you can see a little bit of the differential in various things. So, for instance, on dry, you can see that the 3 programs, Enterprise, Energy Star, and USGBC's LEED for Homes, scored pretty similarly, with NAHB scoring much lower. That's kind of the general theme throughout this, and the reason that the NAHB is scoring lower on pretty much every criteria is that their program is all optional criteria, so very few, if any, mandatory elements. And here were the final scores. So Enterprise Green Communities and Energy Star IAP scoring the highest. And USGBC, it's almost actually a negligible difference when you look at the USGBC LEED H and the other 2 programs, all very, very close at this point. And I will say in 2006, there were a lot more differences, so people are converging in terms of how they're approaching these issues, which is a positive sign. Again, all green programs are not created equal. We would suggest that people that are adopting green building programs really take this information into account. If they're developing their own green standard at the local level, comparing them to the Healthy Homes criteria to get a sense of how they are doing on health would be useful. We noticed that ventilation and pest management are pretty consistently addressed. Safety, cleanability were 2 things that are largely overlooked. Here's a couple things that we're recommending to programs that haven't necessarily captured these things. Dealing with siting and landscaping, for instance. And on safety, again, these things were completely overlooked. And then on contaminants, the only program that right now is requiring radon mitigation in both Zones 1 and Zone 2 is Enterprise. And I think, you know, from a policy standpoint, radon can occur in any home, and so we want to largely encourage radon mitigation. We found that there's sufficient evidence to support it as an healthy homes intervention at a recent expert panel sponsored by CDC. We also know that there's early evidence suggesting that radon mitigation can help with other soil gases and also can help reduce moisture, so you get some other benefits from that. It's one of the more expensive upgrades, but we think the public health impact is probably definitely equal to, if not greater, than the cost of incorporating it. ASHRAE 62.2, this is kind of the standard for how much fresh air we want in homes. I will say it's a comfort-based standard. It's not a health-based standard. And in terms of future research, we do need to understand what level of ventilation we need to provide in homes to keep people healthy. But as an interim strategy, ASHRAE 62 is definitely an improvement over what we have in most homes nationwide. One little caveat about ASHRAE 62.2 is that in the south, and especially in the Gulf area, we've talked to building scientists who worry about bringing in too much moist air because you can have a mold problem. So climate considerations need to be taken into account when you're incorporating this principle. So the full report's available on our website. There's my contact information. And do we want to do questions intermittently or at the end? Okay. Thank you.